Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara now quotes a brisa that says an interesting halacha regarding the sota procedure that's performed in the specific area by the Shara Nicanor. It says a cryptic statement, Ein mashkin shtei sotos ka'achas. We may not give the waters to two sotas to drink at once. Okay? So we have to understand, what does that mean? We understand what the procedure with one of them is, but what does it mean, two of them? It's a simple meaning, as Tosfos says, that we do not even stand both of them in the courtyard at the same time. Could be you have two women, they had a date the same day, they both come to the courtyard, and they both have to be checked out. So we don't give two sotos to drink like one, at the same, they're together, right? And then I'm not talking about from the same cup, but we'll see. But you don't put two sota ladies together to this process. And why not? The answer is kidei shelo yehei liba gas bechaverta, so that her heart will not be emboldened by her fellow lady that's there. In other words, let's say one of the women is guilty and she should not be drinking. And let's say one of the women is innocent and she should be drinking. So now, we know that people like to follow the crowd, and you like to have some kind of support to what you do. So let's say the woman who's guilty, and the bezin's trying to persuade her to not drink, and she's watching what the other lady's doing also, kind of looking what the other people do. And she's saying, no, I'm innocent, I'm prepared to drink the waters. Now, the lady who's guilty, she probably figures that the other lady is probably as guilty as she is. Say, well, if she's guilty and she's willing to drink the water, so now I'll be willing to drink the water even though I'm guilty too. Because it's the Amalek syndrome. You know, just like when Amalek came to attack the Jews and they got wiped out, all of a sudden everybody figured, well, maybe I could do it too. So once you have company in idiocy, then the people seem to do that. As you see in everyday life and everything mishigas that everybody does, as long as another person does it as an idiot, I could be an idiot too. So therefore, if you don't have them together, you see, so she's alone. So she doesn't have any other outside influence that would, God forbid, make her choose the wrong choice. That's what the Mishnah says. However, the Brice. However, Rabbi Yehuda Amar, he's going to disagree. And he says, Lom min Hashem hu zeh. This is not the reason that two sotas may not be given to drink at once. He has another reason for this. And obviously, if he's going to give another reason, it's going to mean there'll be a difference in halacha sometimes. You have a different reason, as we'll see shortly. Ella, Omar Krah, he says, it's a textual source. What are you giving me a logic? The Tana Kama says it's logical. Don't have the two of them together, because one will rely on the other, even though she's guilty. Rebuta says, what do you drain me a cup with logic? It's a text. What does the text say? The text says the word "o saw her." Now, if you look below in the footnotes, it gives you the background. It says "vehishpia o saw hakohen." The kohen makes her swear. Okay, or there's other quotes that are there.
In singular, that's what they.
O saw, exactly. O saw is in singular, and that's what he says. Levado, it implies by herself. And therefore, he gives her to drink. There's only one lady at a time, one lady there. Okay, that's very nice. That's Rabbi Yehuda. But wait a minute. The Tana Kama, the first opinion, didn't quote this pasuk. They just said it's logic. So what are they going to do with the word osa, her? What are they going to do with that word? The Tana Kama, the first opinion that said it was a logical thing, haksiv osa, it says osa. So what are you going to do with that? So Gemara says, well, first of all, who is the Tana Kama? The no-name brand is somebody. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi did not tell us his name, but it's the first opinion. So sometimes we can deduce who the no-name is, who it really is behind that, and if we can know that, we can get the reason for this as well. So he says, the Tana Kama, what are you going to do? He says, Tana Kama, Reb Shimini. The Tana Kama is none other than Reb Shimon. And Reb Shimon has a very interesting position that he has. Because Reb Shimon's opinion throughout the entire Talmud, throughout the entire analysis of the Torah, is as following. And this is a big machlokas. When you see a text in the Torah, do we try to hear what the understanding of the text is saying, or do we just look at what the text says? We'll explain what this means in a second. Reb Shimon's position is to dorish ta'am dekra. He always looks for the rationale of the text to help us understand what the halacha is. So let's take you to Bava Metzia for a minute in the notes, and we'll explain to you a major, major machlokas throughout the Talmud. So machlokas Reb Shimon and the Chachamim, this is going to be a whole different area where the machlokas starts, but it's good background information. Torah says like this, you shall not take as a security the garment of a widow. Sometimes you lend money, you want a security. So Torah says you can't take a widow's garment as a security. That's what Torah says. The Torah thus restricts a lender from exacting an item as security from widow. Now the sages maintain that this prohibition applies to all widows. That's what the text says. Now what if the widow is a multi-billionaire? She's about to do a major loan transaction to further her empire, and she wants to borrow $10 million from the bank. Well, what the Torah says is you don't take a collateral from a widow. Period. I don't have to, you know, that's what God said. Is she a widow? Yes. What does the Torah say? Don't take a collateral. Why are you treating her any better? She got the money. Doesn't matter. That's it. So therefore, the Chacham say, we go exactly what the text says. Don't even try to explain the contextual meaning of the text. All right? Well, hold on. Just hold on. So the sages maintain that this prohibition applies to all widows regardless of their financial condition. Whereas Shimon asserts that this prohibition only applies when the debtor is a poor widow and not when she is a wealthy one. He's trying to understand what's the reason why the text is telling us. All right? For Shimon surmises that the basis of this prohibition is as follows. A lender is obligated to return a security each day should the debtor need it. That's the way it usually happens. You have to return it. If a lender would take security from a widow, and the widow requires that item, he would be forced to frequent the widow's house on a regular basis to return the item. And we know what will happen then. However, when people observe the lender's constant comings and going, they will suspect that the widow is engaging in an inappropriate relationship with him. The Torah therefore forbade one from taking a security from a widow in the first place. Now, this reasoning, however, applies only in the case of a poor widow to whom one must return a security each day, but not to a wealthy widow who presumably does not need the security. Rav Shimon therefore rules that the prohibition not to exact security from a widow does not apply in the case of a wealthy widow. All right? So that's the machlokas they have over there. So now what's the underlying point? Here's the point. The underlying Rav Shimon's argument is the position that the limits of the Torah's laws can be determined by examining their logical basis. The scope of a mitzvah can be defined by examining its rationale. The sages reject this premise and maintain that we have no right to expound the rationale of the mitzvahs in order to define the limits of the law. In other words, do we look at the overall context and try to make to what we can understand is the simple. Obviously, Hashem has much deeper understandings, but should we search to understand what's the Torah trying to get at for us or not? Come and say, let's look at the text, man, and don't be so clever. The Torah says you don't take a collateral from a widow. Finished. Nothing else to discuss. Rav Shimon says, of course, the Torah says it, but it's got to make some sense to us. Understand, it's a widow. Widows are generally poor. You know, 9 out of 10 widows are generally poor. Generally going to need to get a collateral. And if she gets a collateral, she'll have to come every day. And there'll be all kinds of suspicions going on. So therefore, we don't do it. But that only applies when it makes sense to apply this law. When it doesn't make sense to apply the law, it doesn't make sense to this law. So that's what it means that Reb Shimon is Dorish Tam Dekra. Reb Shimon, he expounds the rationale of the scripture versus the Chachamim who don't. So the Chachamim said, let's go back. Let's come to our case now. The rabbi said, listen, it says he give her to drink. And they said, that's it. We don't make any discussion over here. We give her to drink and her and only her and nobody else. Finish. Reb Shimon said that would not be enough. That would not be enough. And now let's see what that's why he has to come on to his reason. So now what's going on? He learns so Uma Tam Komar, and he's thus stating what is the reason. Yes, he agrees the text is there. You give her a drink. But he said, but what's the reason why the Torah says you only give one to drink and not more? He said, let's look at the reason. So, ma tam o salavado, why is the Torah telling us? He's not disagreeing with the source, but he's looking at the source, not just this is what it is and don't think about it. He thinks about it. And says, why does the Torah say you only give her and not another one? And that, as we said, kidei shelo yehei liba gas bechaverta, so that she shouldn't be emboldened by seeing her fellow woman who's saying no as well. So now you're going to say, big deal. What's the difference? What's the difference? Both you agree, you only do it to one person. Well, just like we said by the widow, when he looked for the reason, we found a case where there was a difference. If it's a rich widow, Reb Shimon says, you may take a collateral from her. So you see, that makes a difference in halacha now that we look at the reason. So now what would be the difference if we say here by the two sotas? We don't have two sotas. One says it's a pasuk and don't think about it anymore. The other one says, no, she'll be emboldened by the other woman. So what would be a difference? It would have to be a case where somehow she would not be emboldened by the other woman. We'll have to figure out what that is. But in other words, according to Chama, it doesn't matter. You never have two sotas to drink. Finished. I'm not going to discuss the issue. Rav Shimon says, no, the problem, yeah, that's what the Torah says, but it's because one will be emboldened by the other. Now let's try to think of a case where if you have two sotas together, one will not be emboldened by the other, then you could have two sotas drinking together. So what is that? So my benayhu, what is the difference, the practical difference, if it's the logical or the pasuk? The difference is if the woman is a rosesses, when the woman is trembling out of fear, but still maintains her innocence. She's a scaredy cat. Okay? So now, so the Tana Kama, okay, who's Reb Shimon, who's saying there's a reason to it, would then say, well, she's a scaredy cat's not emboldened. You understand? She's like, they watch it. She's mama shaking. She's shaking the whole time. So they know she's scared. She's not the kind of lady who says, well, if she's doing it, I could do it too. So the Tanakh would permit administering, Reb Shimon, her waters together with another sota, since there's no concern she will become overly confident. Yehuda, however, would forbid it, even in this case, since we have no license to set guidelines for the scriptural law on the basis of our rationale for it. Now, the question we have to, Gemara didn't tell us, so we have to debate, how many of the two have to be trembling? So let's think about it. What does it matter? Well, shouldn't they both be scaredy cats? Because if one, how many have to be trembling? So Rashi implies it's sufficient for one of the sotas to be trembling, as indicated by this singular word. It says roseches. She is trembling, not roschim. They are trembling. The reason seems to be that her obvious fear eliminates not only the concern that she'll become overconfident, but also concern that her fellow will become emboldened by watching her, because she sees the other lady scared to death also. So therefore, the other lady won't be emboldened either. So that would be the difference. If one of the ladies is scared, now you can have them both drink together in the same courtyard. While Rabbi Huda says, don't give me any reasons. The Torah says, her alone, and that's it. So even if one is scared, that would be the difference in the halacha. One second. And it seems that... okay, so now... So that's the machlokes. What's going on over here? Now the Gemara asks, wait a minute. So what are you going to tell me? You're going to tell me, according to Rabbi Yehuda, if one of them is scared and one of them isn't, now you could have two of them drinking. So now the Gemara is going to hit us with a side problem. Forget about the fact that Torah says her alone. So according to the second opinion, her alone, that's it. One, never two, nothing to discuss. Reb Shimon, who's the Tanakh, says, well, it would depend. If one of them is scared, it's possible to have two of them drinking. Now the Gemara is going to pick a side problem. And the side problem works like this. There's a concept that we'll get in a minute. It says, we don't make mitzvahs, we don't bundle up mitzvahs together. We don't bundle up mitzvahs. You don't take one thing and say, well, then I'll do two mitzvahs at the same time with one object. Because, no, you're supposed to appreciate each object for itself. That has all kinds of applications. For example, you don't get married on Chol HaMoed. Why not? Because you're busy with the mitzvah of having simcha of yontif. So what are you now bundling up and now doing another simcha? You know, you allocate each mitzvah its own particular thing. You don't make it seem like it's a burden. Well, since it's yontif anyway, and I already have to spend a lot of money for food, I might as well get married, and now I kill two birds with one stone. That means you're not focusing full attention on either one of the two mitzvahs. Because when you're doing one mitzvah, you do one mitzvah. Stop that mitzvah, you do another mitzvah. You don't bundle up mitzvahs. For rajas, you can bundle up your phone plan. But for mitzvahs, you don't bundle up your phone plan. So hold on. So now the Gemara is going to ask, V'reisechas mimashkin, can a woman who's trembling, can she still drink with the other one? You're still telling me this possible situation where two women can drink together. Ay v'ho enosi mitzvahs chavilas. We have a rule that you don't make mitzvahs into bundles. Here it is. The reason for this principle is that doing two mitzvahs at once can create the impression we're seeking to absolve our obligations quickly by bundling them together. Okay. And that's why you got to focus on each one independently. All right? And that's what it says. We have a Mishnah that even teaches us this. Ditznan, a Mishnah says the following number of cases you don't bundle. Ein mashkin shtei sotos ka'achas. You don't give two sotos to drink at the same time. Ve'ein matarim shtei mitzorim ka'achas. You don't have two mitzoras get purified at the same time. Ve'ein erotzim shnei avodim ka'achas. You don't bore the ear. Remember, if a Jewish slave wants to stay more than 6 years, you don't bore the ear of two at the same time. Ve'ein orpin shtei eglas kachas. And the egla roof, where you decapitate the head of a calf, when you don't know if a guy died, who killed him and who was responsible, we don't do two decapitations for one. Why? Lefi she'ein ose mitzvahs chavilas. Because you don't make mitzvahs into bundles. You don't bundle them up and do them together. So what's going to happen? So Gemara is going to say, no, there's a difference in how you bundle. There's bundling and bundling. Amar Abaye answers, v'yisema Rav Kahana, and some say Rav Kahana answers, lo kash, it's not a question. When do we say we don't bundle it, and let's say we don't have two sotas drink together? Kan b'koin echad. It's only one kohen dealing with two sotas. One kohen dealing with two sotas. One it's the Kohen bundling, exactly. But if he would give two sotas to drink at once, he would be bundling. Therefore, similarly, the Mitzorah is talking about us. One Kohen is taking care of two Mitzorahs, or one person of the Bezdin is boring a hole into both ears of the fellows. But here, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying, it's possible. Kan b'shtei kohanim. You have two kohanim. Kohen A is dealing with sota A, and Kohen B is dealing with sota B. Nobody's bundling anything. This Kohen is totally focused on this sota. This Kohen is totally focused on this sota. No one's bundling anything. Now there's a secondary problem. Is one going to be emboldened by the other? Then that becomes, yeah, well, you only can do it in the Shara Nicanor. There's only one place where you can do it. You don't have different offices to do this. There's only one spot in the base of Mikdash where you do it. So if it happens that there's two Kohanim, and Zriz, you know, and they both are coming, you know, Kohen A was brought to this woman, and Kohen B was brought to this woman. It's a busy day. So we do them. That's not considered bundling, but it comes into the purview of the machlokas, the Tanakam and Yehuda. Can you still do that? Will we have a problem? Will we worry if maybe she will not be emboldened if she's nervous or scared? Or no, we just say it's too bad, you can't do it anyway. All right, that ends that topic. Next topic.
Can I ask one quick question for you?
Yeah.
We talked about, the Pasuk actually says a garment from the widow. Is it specific to a garment, or you can't take any collateral?
It means anything you'd have to come back to get. Anything
that a rich lady, you're going to take something significant they don't need on a daily basis. Would you allow?
Well, that's the machlok. If they don't need it, if it's something they don't need, you don't have to give it back. It's something that they need. Usually, a widow, whatever you're going to take, she's going to need. She doesn't have anything extra. If a person doesn't need, you don't have to give it back. That's for anybody. Next, the coin grabs hold of her clothing. The Mishnah says, if they get torn, he yanks it. If they get torn, they're torn. If they get shredded, they get shredded. He rips them till he exposes the top part of her body, and he also undoes her hair. So Gemara now wants to understand what's going on over here. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara gives the source for this. It says, the Torah says in the Bible, Upora es rosh ha'isha, he shall uncover the head of the woman. So we have that text. Ein li ela rosha, I would think it's only the head. Where does it say you uncover the top part of her chest? Where does it say that? Gufa minayin, her body. How do you know that must be bared? Talmud Lomer have an extra word. It says ha'isha, the woman. It could have just said upara esrosha, just uncover her head. Why is it say you uncover her, the head of the woman? Who else were we talking about if not the woman? So that whole extra word ha'isha is extra. So obviously we're uncovering her hair and we're also uncovering the woman. In Cain, if that's the case, Ma Talmud Lomer Pas Rasha, so why did it have to say you uncover her head? If we go as far as exposing the top part of her body, then obviously her hair, head also. No. Malami Chakoyin Soisar. It means that not only does he uncover her hair, but he unbraids her hair. She could have her hair in a braid, and her hair is covered. Her hair is uncovered, and the braids are undone, and now the hair is like flying all over the place. Today, everyone would think that's the way a woman wants to go. This is called a denigration of a woman, that her hair is flying all over the place.
Where we learn a woman should cover her hair.
This is the source, because if the Torah is saying you uncover her hair, usually means she always has her hair covered. If it's meant to degrade her, it means that the glory of the woman is to have her hair covered. And therefore, she didn't act in a proper way, therefore we cover it. So this is the source for that. All right, now, then, that's it. What? A married woman, because she's a married woman. That's the case. We're dealing with a married woman. A married woman to have uncovered hair is not dignified for her. But if she's not married, then she doesn't have to cover her hair. Now, Rabbi Yehuda comes along in the Mishnah. We re-quote the Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Im Hoya Liba, if she was extremely attractive, we do not allow her to remain uncovered and we cover her up. What's the reason? And so obviously it's going to say because people are going to, some of the Kohanim there are going to have some not such good thoughts. Are you telling me now that Rabbi Yehuda, now remember this is a machlokas, Rabbi Yehuda, the sages said, you uncover her chest, finished. Rabbi Yehuda said, no. So again, the Chachamim say, under all circumstances, you bare her chest. Yehuda says, no, it depends. If she's very attractive, you cover it up afterwards. So now you're going to say, so what's Rabbi Yehuda concerned about? Are we saying Rabbi Yehuda's concerned about lewd thoughts of the bystanders? And what's the machlokas? Rabbi's not concerned about it? The rabbi said, well, no, she's really beautiful. You can still hear that. Is that what you're going to say? We've already learned the opposite from another place. The Tanya, we learned in another brisa regarding the procedure for carrying out the execution of a person. It says, when you execute a person, you throw stones at him. Question is, how much clothing does he wear? So it says, ha'ish, if it's a man, and we put him down on the ground, we throw stones on top of him. So now what do we do with him? Machasin also perik echad milfanav. They remove his clothing, but they cover the front part of his private parts with a small material. They cover the front part, so that's his private parts. It should be covered. Va'isha, but a woman, shnei prakim. You cover two parts, echad milfanav, one part in front, and one part in the back. Okay? Why? Because for a woman, mitnei shekula ever, that's all considered her nakedness. All right? Even from a man, his genitals are only seen from the front, and that's it. In the back, you have nothing to worry about. A woman is a little bit, if you could see from the back as well, so you got to cover the front, you got to cover the back. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda holds. V'chachamim omrim, chachamim say, ha'ish niskal orum. The man is stoned without any clothes. All right? Ve'ein ha'isha niskelas aruma, and the woman is not stoned unclothed. See, here, the rabbis prohibit the disrobing of the woman at all. Rabbi Yehuda says you can disrobe her, but just not the bottom part. But the top can be disrobed. And the rabbis say not. So here you see, it seems the opposite. The rabbis are more concerned that the woman should be clothed, so it's the opposite. Before, Rabbi Yehuda said, well, if she's very beautiful, you cover her up. Rabbi said, no, you don't have to cover her up. Here we see the rabbis say the opposite. You cover her up completely. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can do the opposite. So what's going on over here? So that seems to be a contradiction. Rava says, no. Hacha time of my, what's the reason over here by the soita that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't permit that to happen? Because Shema tates in essence of Christ. Because maybe she'll come out innocent. And all these guys saw how attractive she was. And then these garuba pirchei kahuna, then the young kohanim are going to get all excited to go on a date with her. Speed dating. But Hassam over there, who's going to be jealous of a lady who's going to be looking like minced meat in a few seconds, once those rocks and boulders come pounding away at her, hamistalka, she's all done. All right? You might say, v'chi teman, if you're going to object, usili guru bachmanis, they'll be provoked by seeing in the lacting morally with other women. They got all excited, you know, like they got their own little halachic porn movie, and now they're going to go to another one. They get all excited. You might think that. No. Hamar Rava. Rava says, Gemiri, we have a rule. The Yetzirah only prevails over what he sees with his own eyes. So even though he sees a woman exposed, it could maybe lead a man later at a later time, but that's only to that same woman, but not to another woman. Okay? And I think that would be a good place to stop for today. It's a little bit more on that topic, but we're going to...